Welcome to Gruesomely Gorgeous. I'm your host, Taylor Wells. Joining me, my fellow narrator, Crystal Nail. All of our stories are researched by our criminal justice expert, Caitlin Brandt. Together, we are Gruesomely Gorgeous. Hey, all of you gruesomely gorgeous guys and ghouls. Are you ready for a really freaking weird story today? I read this article, I think yesterday, and I just had to share it with you guys because it is one of the most bizarre stories that I've heard in a long time. So get ready. The story of Katie and Stephen Flattle is not a normal father-daughter story. It involved a lot. The disturbing story caught so much attention.
"We are all still in shock,"
said Shirley Mann, a neighbor of Katie's adoptive parents in Dover.
"It's crazy. I don't even know what else to say. It's horrible."
In 1995, Stephen Plattle, age 20 at the time, met a 15-year-old girl, Alyssa, on the internet. Soon, Alyssa became pregnant and gave birth to a baby girl named Denise in January of 1998. So here's our first red flag. This man at 20 years old impregnated a 15-year-old child and had a baby with said child. According to Alyssa, Stephen was also abusive towards their infant daughter. She told that Stephen would pinch their infant daughter until her body was left black and blue. Despite all of this, Alyssa stayed with Stephen and ended up marrying him. Can you imagine? I know that there's a lot of different elements at play with abuse and staying with people, but this just truly breaks my heart for that child. The couple was young and poor, so they decided to put Denise up for adoption when she was 8 months old. That, I think, is probably the most wise thing that they did in this entire article. She told in an interview that it was so hard to give her up, but I wanted her to live and be happy. Denise was adopted by Anthony and Kelly Fusco, where she was given the new name Katie Fusco. She moved to Anthony and Kelly's home in Dutchess County, New York. In 2007, Alyssa, the birth mother, gave birth to another child, a baby girl. Alyssa stated that they were more grown up and ready to have children at this stage in their life. In 2012, the family welcomed another member, a third daughter, to Stephen and Alyssa. Katie was an aspiring artist at Dover High School. She loved to draw comic strips, and she planned to attend college and pursue a career in digital advertising.
"A pen and something I draw on becomes a safe place for me. Ink became my weapon against rules and regulations. To be sure, for me, a life without art is no life at all,"
she wrote in a blog post. After turning 18 in January of 2016, Katie became curious about her biological parents. She started tracking the town and found Alyssa and Stephen on social media and messaged them. The parents were happy to reunite with her. Katie had plans to enroll in the local community college after her graduation, but she moved in with her parents and her sisters in Henrico County, Virginia. Things weren't going great with Stephen and Alyssa. The couple had already been sleeping in separate beds for months before Katie arrived.
"I was always walking on eggshells whenever his mood was, everybody knew, and that mood was often not happy. A lot of yelling, a lot of things smashed in the house in front of kids,"
Alyssa said. She even told Katie and Stephen Plattle had abused her when she was a baby, and that is why they had to give her up for adoption. But Katie did not appear to be concerned. So weird. Stephen's behavior completely changed after he met Katie. He began wearing skinny jeans and form-fitting shorts to look good and impress his own daughter. Oh, that's so gross. He even shaved his beard and let his hair grow long. 6 weeks after Katie moved in, Stephen began sleeping on the floor in her room. When Alyssa confronted him, he said it was none of her business and stormed out of the house with Katie. Alyssa moved out of the house in November of 2016. She shared custody of her two children with Stephen. Alyssa had only a suspicion about their relationship, but she had no idea about how far it had gone. In May of 2017, Alyssa found out about the incestuous relationship and about Katie's pregnancy from her 11-year-old daughter's journal. Her daughter also mentioned that she and her sister were told by Stephen, their father, to refer to Katie as their stepmom rather than their sister. So there's a little picture of the 11-year-old daughter's journal. So I'm going to try to read it and make out what it says. It's not written in the best handwriting, but we've got this.
Katie is my big sister. I really effing hated when she came and walked the hallway on before she said, "Hey, Sam," me in my head. Oh, God, she said my name. I would get very depressed every time she would have to something train back to New York. I also loved how she was kind of skinny in areas and has smaller breasts. But now she is pregnant and gained weight. My dad calls her baby, also his baby. Did he make her pregnant? My dad even says she's my stepmom. WTF. He doesn't even want me to something and calls my sister something. Katie is my sister. She's probably his wife now, but in nature, she is my sister. Does she see me as a daughter or a sister? Katie now tells me sometimes to get the F up.
Wow. So that's the end of that journal entry of the sister. And there's a lot to unpack there, especially her being so young and seeing this kind of behavior in a man, much less her father and her freaking sister. I cannot imagine the long-term psychological damage that this is going to have on everybody. But wait, it gets worse. When Alyssa called Stephen and asked,
"Is Katie pregnant with your baby?"
he replied,
"I thought you knew. We're in love."
To which she started screaming. She started cursing him out.
"How could you? You're sick. She is a child."
A child, much less, she is his child too. I think they're missing the main point of that. After the call, Alyssa called the police. That's great. Police officers interviewed Stephen and Alyssa's children, but no arrests were made. Then 2 months after his divorce from Alyssa was finalized, Stephen married his daughter, Katie, in Parkton, Maryland on July 20th in 2017. No one said anything because they lied on their application saying that they were unrelated. The wedding ceremony was filled with guests, including Stephen's parents and Katie's adoptive parents. Katie's adoptive parents believed that there was nothing that they could do and it was best to support Katie. BS, that is just some really bad parenting. Katie gave birth to her father's baby and they named the boy Bennett. Katie and Stephen moved to a house on a cul-de-sac in Knightdale, North Carolina, but the happy time for the newlyweds did not last long. Katie and Stephen were arrested on incest charges in January. They were released on bond in order to have no contact with one another. Stephen's mother was granted custody of the child, Bennett. Katie moved back in with her adoptive parents. Every Tuesday and Thursday, she would travel to his grandmother's home in Waterbury, Connecticut. Stephen knew that Katie would go visit his grandmother on April 12th. On the night of April 11th, Stephen drove to New York to catch Katie, who was leaving New York, to live with her adoptive grandmother. Katie called Stephen to end the relationship. Before meeting her on April 11th in 2018, Stephen stole their baby from his mother's house. He then brought the baby back to his house, where, sadly, he suffocated him and left the body in a closet. Stephen waited outside their home and watched Katie and her adoptive father leave together in a vehicle. He followed them, and when they stopped at the stop sign between routes 7 and 55, Stephen shot Katie and her adoptive father, killing them both before turning the gun on himself. Stephen's mother called 911. She told the dispatcher that her son had killed the baby that was in her custody.
He left the baby dead. He told me to call the police and I shouldn't go over there. His wife broke up with him yesterday over the phone. She's in New York and he told me he's on his way after bringing the baby to her. And then he was coming back.
Alyssa Plattel struggles to make sense of it all. I am grieving. I am sad. I am upset. But I also want to have something good come out of this. It's to get the truth out there, to open people's eyes to incest. Wow. Yes, this story certainly has opened my eyes to incest, and I cannot even fathom being anybody in this story, honestly. It's just very unfortunate and sad for everybody involved. Next, unfortunately, in a similar vein of our previous story, we're going to be talking about the Willis family on TLC. Now, we've all heard about the Duggar scandals, the Josh Duggar scandals, but now another one is resurfacing. This apparently happened in 2018. I had never heard about it. It seemed to have been brushed under the rug a bit. Maybe I just didn't know about it, but the Willis family became famous from America's Got Talent, and that all went downhill very quickly after only two seasons on TLC. A seemingly squeaky clean Christian family band from Tennessee, consisting of 12 telegenic kids who gained fame on America's Got Talent and got their own TLC reality show, has quietly imploded with the arrest of the children's father on a child rape charge in Kentucky. Toby Willis, who is 46, the hard-driving patriarch of the Willis clan, who said he expected his kids to achieve excellence in all they did, was arrested in tiny Greenville, Kentucky on September 9th, just hours before his family was to perform in a concert in Felix Martin Jr. Hall. After Willis was taken away from the venue in handcuffs on a fugitive from justice warrant by Greenville police and detectives from the Tennessee Bureau of Investigation, his family went ahead with the show anyway. The TBI began investigating Willis on August 29th after receiving information that Willis had a sexual encounter about 12 years ago with an underaged child. According to a police statement issued after Willis's arrest in Tennessee, the charge of child rape applies to the sexual assault of children between the ages of 3 and 12. That's disgusting. Nashville's News Channel 5 reported Wednesday night that Willis had allegedly been charged with raping a family member. It said the family member had been removed by Willis from her bed and raped. It also reported that authorities confirmed Willis was not allowed to go around his biological children or his wife. According to the Fox affiliate in Nashville, Brenda Willis issued a statement after her husband's extraditions to Tennessee on Wednesday, indicating she and her family are supporting the district attorney's office. I was shocked and devastated by the revelation of events leading to Toby Willis's arrest, as these are very trying times for the Willis family. I kindly ask all to respect our family's privacy. As a mother of 12, my first priority remains with my children and helping them through this traumatic event. We are canceling all appearances for the foreseeable future to focus on the children and their well-being. We apologize for any inconvenience this may cause. We have and will continue to fully cooperate with law enforcement officials and ask you to direct all inquiries regarding Toby Willis's case to the district attorney's office, who have our complete support. So this is total utter bullshit, and it pisses me off because the mom knew not the entire time, but she knew about it for a long time prior to this. And this quote makes it seem like she just found out and it was news to her. False. This is the worst type of person you can be, to know someone is purposefully harming your children not do anything about it, and then pretend you didn't know about it. Like, these poor children have the worst parents that they could ever have gotten. Willis was held without bail in Muhlenberg County Jail, waiting extradition to Tennessee before being extradited to Nashville. The family is from Chicago, but moved outside Nashville years ago to break into country music. Oddly, police sources say Willis arrived in Greenville separately and before his family did, although they all showed up at the concert hall Friday afternoon to prep for the evening show at about the same time. TBI investigators, who accused Willis of trying to escape justice by leaving Tennessee for Kentucky, said in a statement Monday that Willis apparently hitchhiked about 115 miles from Shepherdsville, just south of Louisville, to Greenville. The TBI is seeking information about two people who may have given Willis rides during that period. No one can figure out why he was hitchhiking, a police source told the Daily Beast. Willis's wife, Brenda, and their kids are all accomplished musicians, singers, and composers. They play the guitar, flute, fiddle, and violin, among other instruments, and write their own Irish-flavored Christian country songs, which got them on the NBC reality competition show America's Got Talent in 2014, as well as regular appearances at the Grand Ole Opry. Many of the kids are also nationally ranked Irish dancers, swing dancers, and state wrestling champions. Toby Willis ran the soundboard at the family concerts. Their show, The Willis Family, ran for 2 seasons on TLC, but was canceled. TLC said in a statement that it had thoroughly checked the Willis family members prior to signing them to the show and were shocked at the news of Toby's arrest. I'm not so sure about that. Like, the infamous Duggar family, who had a longer-running TV show on TLC, was canceled because of a molestation scandal involving their eldest son, Josh. All 12 children in the Willis family are homeschooled, and all the names begin with the letter J. 8 girls and 4 boys range from age 5 to 12. So you can see there's a lot of similarities in these two families. I think that's kind of suspect. I expect my kids to be the best. But the best involves a lifetime commitment, Toby Willis said in the TLC show, which featured him often rounding up the kids quite firmly, Captain Von Trapp style, for dancing, wrestling, and music lessons in the home. In most photos taken of the family, Brenda Willis and the children are invariably smiling and laughing, whereas Toby Willis conspicuously almost never breaks a grin. We like to enjoy a full spectrum of life. We do music, dance, art, crafts, writing, as well as horses, wrestling, homemade cooking, swimming in the creek, and snuggling up before our fireplace warming our log cabin, Brenda Willis wrote on a family website. Honestly, to me, that sounds like, again, total, utter bullshit that someone would just write on a blog. Anyway. Brenda Willis also told People last year that she and her husband raised their kids by staying true to the Bible. She also indicated how much control her husband exerted over their family, especially his daughters. He approves every outfit the girls wear, his wife Brenda said. He pretty much buys everything. Almost all the Willis's social media accounts, except one, their official Facebook account, were deleted immediately after Willis's arrest. The family also shut down their official website and canceled the rest of the shows on their fall tour. They had been scheduled to perform in Washington, D.C. on September 19th. Toby Willis's family of origin has a well-publicized tragic backstory, details of which came up more than once during the TLC show. In 1994, Willis's Baptist preacher father and his mother were driving 6 of their 9 kids on a trip from Chicago to Wisconsin when their van ran over a piece of metal that had fallen from another truck and exploded, killing all the children. The elder Willises escaped the van. Toby Willis and his 2 other siblings were not in the van at the time. Again, that's kind of suspect. When do you drive over a piece of metal on the road and your car just freaking explodes? I've never had that happen to me before, nor have I seen that ever happen. The incident was big news in Chicago for years, partly because it came out that the driver of the rig responsible for the metal debris had bribed a state worker for his license. The investigation The investigation led to charges of large-scale corruption and cover-ups that ended with 75 state employees and then Governor George Ryan being sent to jail. The badly burned Willis grandparents and the three surviving siblings received a $100 million settlement, one of the largest ever rewarded in Illinois. Toby and Brenda Willis, who did not have to work because of the settlement, moved to the Nashville area in 2001 and bought singer Randy Travis's compound in nearby Ashland City. But on December 26, 2005, the home burned to the ground while the family was away and they lost all of their possessions. Oh my gosh, this man, is he just like a serial arsonist or something? Though Brenda Willis said on the show that the family planned to rebuild one day, they decamped to the rather shabby log cabin rental nearby that was seen on the TLC show. Many commenters on the Willis clan forums referenced the rented log cabin and questioned why their family never rebuilt on their own land since they presumably had more than enough money. Even stranger Brenda Willis wrote on the family website about how their lease was expiring on their rental home this year and they were planning to live in the tour bus from this summer on as they had such a packed touring schedule. It's unclear where the family is living right now. Earlier this summer, the eldest child in the family, Jessica, who's 24, abruptly left the band with many fans asking where she was. Her parents briefly referenced her departure in a Facebook Live video, but were otherwise vague. The morning after Toby Willis's arrest, Jessica's boyfriend posted a photo of a lamp outside at sunset on Facebook with the words, "Speak truth boldly." In an interview with Megyn Kelly, years later, they all finally speak about the abuse by their own father and how they finally decided to speak up. When their father started to manage the other young girls outside the family, in a shocking turn of events, their mother, Brenda Willis, is still standing by her husband and not with her own daughters. One of the Willis sisters, Jessica Willis Fisher, has documented her experience on her website. In the website, she writes, "As far back as I can remember, I was sexually abused by my father. I figured I was somewhere around 3 years old in some of the earliest memories. Initially, I had no way to know that anything was wrong. When I did eventually come to realize the fact, I had no way to accurately express what was happening to me. There followed immense shame, distrust, and hurt throughout my childhood, even in the happy times. Thus ran the two parallel storylines that became my life." Jessica described her home life as underneath the outward foundations of family, religion, and homeschooling with an emphasis on the arts, there was a constant current of manipulation, domination, fear, and favor. She also explicitly states that her father controlled the family. The 12 siblings have previously performed together, and now 6 of them have worked on a new album that deals with their life after abuse and rape. A lot of these songs were written more as therapy, kind of sorting through our past and what we were going through, says Jennifer Willis McDowell, who came forward as one of her father's victims. But they started playing the songs to each other and to friends and family who liked what they heard. Once we saw how much the songs and the writing and the sharing with them and everyone else was helping us, we said, "Let's share our story because it might help somebody else," Willis McDowell says. The title track from the new album, which sister Jessica penned, had captured the internal struggle of the family. The lyrics are, "This is not right, and I want to speak out, but I don't know if I can," Jennifer says in a song that she wrote while she was enduring the abuse from her father. Anyone who has gone through any kind of abuse, regardless of whether it's sexual abuse or not, or has dealt with that internal struggle of, "What can I do? Am I strong enough? Do I have the courage to do what I need to do?" says Willis McDowell. There's so much fear that's involved with that. The siblings have partnered with an organization called RAIN, the Rape, Abuse, and Incest National Network. RAIN is an organization of over 1,000 sexual assault centers across the U.S. with an anonymous hotline and an educational website to help understand their options and situations. If you or someone you know is a victim of sexual abuse, please call the National Sexual Assault Hotline at 1-800-656-4673. They're available 24 hours every day.